Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
And a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments. Spotlight Spain, as Benedict XVI gets ready to travel to Santiago de Compostela and Barcelona. A conversation with the rector of the Royal English College in Valladolid. And an interview with Cardinal-designate Archbishop Gianfranco Ravasi, the president of the Pontifical Council for Culture, which is holding its plenary assembly next week, from the 10th to the 13th of November. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. Two very different moments for Benedict XVI as he's about to depart on an apostolic visit, his 18th abroad, which takes him to Spain for the second time as Roman pontiff, during which he'll preside over two masses and consecrate an altar in a very special church. Without giving too much away, it's a journey which begins on Saturday as the Pope goes as pilgrim to one of the most popular pilgrimage sites in Europe, Santiago de Compostela, and then ends Sunday in Barcelona. Lydia O'Kane is travelling with the Pope. She's familiar with both these places. Stay tuned.
It's a visit that lasts just 32 hours, believe it or not. But as always with Pope Benedict, there's so much packed in to this visit, and it's a visit in two parts. What I'll do is I'll just give a rundown of what the Pope will be doing as soon as he steps off the plane at the international airport of Santiago de Compostela. He's due to arrive there at about 11:30 on Saturday morning.
Of course, Santiago is a pilgrimage site, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is the reason he's going. He's going for the Holy Year or Jubilee Year, and that's celebrated, well, it depends actually. This year it's 2010, the next year it'll be celebrated as in 11 years' time.
It's connected to the Apostle James.
That's right, it's connected to the Apostle James, and he's patron saint of Spain. And his feast day is celebrated on the 25th of July. Now, when his feast day falls on a Sunday, that's when it's a holy year. So this year, his feast day fell on a Sunday. And in 11 years' time, it'll have fallen on a Sunday as well. Mm. So this is the reason for that.
Of course, our listeners will probably have heard of Santiago de Compostela because it's very popular.
Well, it's one of the most famous pilgrimage sites in Christendom, you should say. After Rome, after Jerusalem, there's Santiago de Compostela, and it's been a pilgrimage site since the 9th century. St. James himself preached in the Holy Land, but he came to Spain, and legend has it that he received a vision from the Virgin Mary, who told him to go back to Judea. And when he went back to Judea, he was beheaded. And his body was brought back by his disciples to Santiago de Compostela. And what you see now is the cathedral there and his remains are said to be there. So this is the huge draw. And the pilgrimage route is called the Way of St. James, and there are many different routes you can take.
From different countries. No?
Absolutely. So there are many different routes you can take, all leading to this climactic point of the cathedral at Santiago de Compostela, which the Pope will be visiting on his visit before saying Mass in the afternoon on Saturday. So it'll give him a chance to venerate the relics of
St. But the Mass won't be at the cathedral. Then.
The Mass will be in the piazza outside. So you can imagine, I've already been talking to the pilgrims' office at Santiago de Compostela. So it's a holy year already, Veronica. So there are already more people this year coming because of the holy year, because of the Jubilee year. And because of Pope Benedict's visit, there has been more registrations. So I can imagine when Pope Benedict celebrates Mass on that day, there will be thousands of people there to be with him on that Saturday. So really, it'll be a wonderful occasion.
Santiago is geographically in the northwest.
The northwest.
Northwest.
The northwest of Spain.
The region is Galicia, no?
The region is Galicia. And, I mean, Galicia is an autonomous region. And it has its own traditions. It has its own language, Galician. So it's very much its own boss, as it were. It has a devolved government. And it's one of a number of autonomous regions in Spain. There's also Catalonia, where the Pope will be visiting, and we'll come to that. Barcelona, which is the capital of Catalonia, that's another autonomous region as well. And we should point out that Santiago de Compostela is the capital of that region as well. So it does have that accolade. Yes, it does have that accolade.
And Barcelona is the capital of Catalonia.
Indeed.
So very different the second day.
Well, it's a very different day. I mean, the first day is all about pilgrimage and celebrating pilgrimage. And the Pope likes to call himself the Pilgrim Pope, and he's been on so many pilgrimages. I mean, he's been to Lourdes, he's been to Fatima, and it's a celebration of pilgrimage, really.
Mariazell.
Absolutely. Yes. It's a celebration, definitely.
And he has the symbolic pilgrim shell in his coat of arms.
That's right.
Getting on to Barcelona then.
Barcelona, the second, of course, part of this
Sunday.
Visit. He's there, again, a short time, but it's an important time because he's going to consecrate a very famous church or temple, as it is also called, the expiatory temple of the Sagrada Familia. And this is, at the moment, a tourist site. It's never celebrated Mass. There's a crypt down below, but it's never had a Mass celebrated in it. And when the Pope goes, he will consecrate the church and the altar.
It's a striking architecture, isn't it?
It's absolutely striking. It's, of course, the
You've
architect...
You've seen it, haven't you?
I have seen it. It's wonderful. I mean, anyone who's been there, there's just a point when you come at it and you just think in amazement. It's
full
a fantastic
of symbolism,
structure.
Yeah.
It's full of symbolism because Gaudí was very much a man of faith, and he was the architect, and it's also full. He thought a lot about nature, and anyone who goes inside it will see a lot of the columns look like columns of trees. They look like tree trunks almost. He was very into nature, as it were, and you see that in the Sagrada Familia, in the architecture of the Sagrada Familia.
And he has a good knowledge of spiritual significance, no, Gaudí?
Gaudí, yes, indeed. I mean, he certainly was a very spiritual man, and there's also a cause being opened up for his beatification. He practically lived at the Sagrada Familia, and unfortunately, coming out of the Sagrada Familia, he was killed by a tram, which and he is now buried underneath the Sagrada Familia in the crypt, which is consecrated. It has a normal church which has celebrations, weddings. Actually, when I was there, there was a wedding being celebrated in the crypt. It's very much an everyday running church. But as I say, this part, the second highlight of the visit, will be this consecration. There'll be the solemn rite of consecration. He will proclaim it a basilica after that. It'll be proclaimed a minor basilica.
Is anything else happening in Barcelona?
Well, after he consecrates the Sagrada Familia, he will have the opportunity to visit a centre for disabled children, and it's called the Obra Beneficio Nendeu. And it's a centre that really helps children with severe disabilities such as Down syndrome or autism, and the Pope will be visiting there after consecrating the Sagrada Familia, so it'll be a chance for him to see the children. And I hear that the children have been preparing very hard for this visit. I was talking to one of the teachers and she was telling me that they've been painting pictures for the Pope and really getting very ready for this visit, and they're all dying for the Pope to come. There's a real anticipation for the Pope coming. And I was talking to the teacher and she called it a privilege. And it's the only place, it's the only school, it's the only centre that he'll be visiting apart from the consecration of the Sagrada Familia.
On his second apostolic visit to Spain, because he went to Valencia.
He did. He went to Valencia for the World Meeting of Families in 2006. And it's interesting about that because times have changed since 2006 in Spain. There has been new legislation with regard to abortion, which was brought in just this year. And Spain has also, like many other European countries, gone through a severe financial crisis, which is still ongoing. And the government has, again, like other countries, has brought through austerity measures, which have been fairly unpopular in Spain. So there's been a shift. There's been a shift in the social and economic landscape of Spain since the Pope's visit. So I think that the Pope may mention something about that. Certainly in the United Kingdom, he did bring up the fact of the financial crisis, which has, as I was saying, engulfed many European countries. But that may be a point. But also the interesting thing about Pope Benedict is this whole aspect of new evangelization. Most recently, he authorised a new pontifical council for new evangelization. And it's very much, to me, seems like the Sagrada Familia, the consecration of the Sagrada Familia, almost is very symbolic of a new evangelization, the fact that it's going to be consecrated as a new basilica to spread the faith, to almost like a rebirth, almost. It's very symbolic of that new evangelization that Pope Benedict has so often talked about.
Our thanks go to Lydia, and you'll be hearing more from her over the next few days as she'll be keeping us posted on the Pope's activities. Before setting off for Spain, Lydia spoke to the rector of the Royal English College in Valladolid, which was founded in 1589. He's Monsignor Michael Corja and affords us some background on a very English enclave in Spain, one which takes us back in time to the days of Queen Elizabeth I of England and Philip II of Spain. But let's listen to Monsignor Corja's words.
Robert Parsons founded us really because the seminaries in the rest of Europe were quite full. So he needed more places for students who wanted to study for the priesthood, particularly because of the persecution in England in the reign of Elizabeth I. And so he came to Valladolid, which at that time was the capital of Spain and where Philip II actually lived. We've had a very interesting history with Spanish rectors and Jesuit rectors up until the expulsion of the Jesuits from Spain in the reign of Charles II and Carlos II. And now the English rectors who've been here for the last 200-odd years. And we've very much taken a part in the life of the city here and in the Diocese of Valladolid, and very much at the heart, as it's known in Valladolid, as an English isle in Castile y León.
Given we now have a little historical background, let's find out more about the geographical context. Perhaps not everyone knows where Castilla y León happens to be.
we're about 220 kilometres north of Madrid, and around about us, within an hour, easy by motorway and by train, we've got Avila and Segovia and Caralauega, places of Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross and of St. Dominic.
An area of Spain spoilt for saints, for a college which has, as it turns out, its very own martyrs as well.
Certainly spoiled for choice, and the college itself has 6 martyr saints and with 18 other beatified martyrs and other martyrs and confessors, so we've got quite a history.
Now, given the successor of Peter is arriving in Spain for a weekend visit, beginning in Santiago de Compostela, a pilgrimage site that goes back 11 centuries, during a year especially dedicated to the Apostle James, let's find out a little bit more about the college's link with Santiago and, of course, with Rome.
The college has always been connected directly with Rome, and the link has always been there. And so sort of anything to do with apostles and are very much at the heart of our college ethos, and particularly St. James, because here we are in Spain, it's a holy year and the Holy Father's coming. So sort of we like to celebrate the apostles and feel our connection with Rome itself.
As the Pope's visit begins in the very place millions of pilgrims reach on foot each year, where he'd carry out the traditional pilgrim rituals at the cathedral, it might be interesting to find out more about some of the pilgrims that pass by the English College in Valladolid, which is on one of the 3 caminos or pilgrim routes that lead to Santiago, the other 2 being from France and Portugal. But let's find out why Monsignor Cuja feels the Pope's presence at this pilgrimage site is so relevant.
Well, I think it is wonderful. I think we're seeing something quite extraordinary. And, you know, we had the recent visit to the United Kingdom, which was wonderful. And I think why it's important, because Spain at the moment sort of is in a dark place like most of Europe economically and socially and so on. We need him to come. We need him to come to Spain to sort of to cheer us up, to announce some good news. And wherever he's going, one of the characteristics that we're hearing is the quality of the sermons that he's giving and the encouragement. That's what we need here in Spain at the moment, and especially for all the Catholics who just need that affirmation. I think there's something extraordinary in that. Wherever you go, you get that sense that he is on a pilgrimage and he's drawing us to him. And I note, sort of particularly when he was in England, and I note here also, because we're also in preparation for World Youth Day next summer, that young people love him. And I think there's something really fantastic about that, absolutely tremendous. I have seminarians here, and he is really their big hero.
So Santiago, Barcelona, and next August, as Monsignor Cuja mentions, Madrid. This begs the question, what kind of a social context is he going to find in a traditionally Catholic nation where the government has recently relaxed divorce laws, legalization of gay marriage, and legislation to make abortion more accessible?
The feeling is quite split, to be quite honest. But the great majority of Spaniards, I suppose it's like populations all around the world, sort of, suddenly they find themselves with legislation and it begins to dawn them, what on earth have we done? What's going on here? I know the new abortion laws, particularly, which were brought in where parents of younger girls did not have to be told that they were having abortions, has caused tremendous problems for people. There's still a great family orientation here in Spain.
And while I'd now like to thank the rector of the Royal English College in Valladolid, Monsignor Michael Cuja, for sharing all this information with us, I'd like to add something. And that's that ever since he was elected as successor of Peter, Benedict XVI said he wanted to live his ministry with the sentiments of pilgrims who travel the roads of the world with hope and simplicity, bringing on his lips and in his heart the saving message of the risen Christ, and strengthening his brothers in faith. Well, in news from the Vatican, I'd like to pop across the road a moment, where, as you may be aware, there's a pontifical council. There's more than one, actually, but this particular one deals with culture and is getting ready to host an exciting event, as its president announced on Wednesday in the press office. A president who will be created cardinal at the end of November by Pope Benedict XVI, a sign, perhaps, of the importance that the Pope attributes to culture. Well, stay tuned as I prepare the briefest of features for you. The culture of communication and new languages. That's the theme the president of the Pontifical Council for Culture, Cardinal Designate Archbishop Gianfranco Ravasi, has chosen for the plenary assembly of this council, which takes place next week from the 10th to the 13th of November, both within Vatican walls and in other Roman venues, hosting not the usual in-house event with council members, but one extended to lay representatives from the world of culture as well, an effort to broaden the horizons of this meeting, set to focus in a special way on the challenges represented by communicating the Christian message in our increasingly technological contemporary society. My colleague Fabio Colagrande asked Archbishop Ravasi why this particular theme was chosen and whether it reflects an issue currently at the heart of a debate within the Church. Even to us, the language used in ecclesial circles sometimes lacks in resonance, the Archbishop replied. And he went on to illustrate his thoughts in this regard, choosing to highlight the complex and sophisticated language used by theologians as an example of how little it means to Catholics in the pews on Sundays, who are used to a more familiar language, that of television and internet, in short, that in common everyday usage. Certainly, while communication may need to be founded on logic, coherence, and suitable vocabulary, at the same time it must attempt to captivate a broader audience by finding new language skills to reach out to as many people as possible, the Archbishop continued. Otherwise, he stressed, we risk failing to convey the content of the message. At a more pastoral level, the Archbishop also identified the need to find innovative ways to spread the message at a catechetical level, enhancing how he feels it is his primary duty to clearly understand where the great trends in contemporary communication lie. But the Archbishop's strongest statement in this interview came when he shone the spotlight on the content of the message to be conveyed. In his words, sometimes even simple words that refer to the Church don't mean anything outside ecclesial circles. Because of this, it is necessary, without losing sight of the content, to attempt what McLuhan suggested. That's to say, making the medium part of the message communicated. Clearly, this might entail some variations in the message. I'm thinking of the Council of Chalcedon, where a profound variation of the comprehension of the figure of Christ took place. Christology, adopting categories that were not those used in the Bible, but rather in Greek culture. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. And while my thanks there go to the President of the Pontifical Council for Culture, Cardinal Designate Archbishop Gianfranco Ravasi, and to my colleague Fabio Colagrandi, who interviewed him, I'd like to make a little announcement, and that's that we'll be hearing more about this Pontifical Council with Richard Rouse for next week, as I've set up an interview with him on Monday. Finally, I'd like to bring you a couple of excerpts from the spiritual writings of Saint Teresa of Avila. They've been chosen for us by Jill Bevilacqua.
I suffered great affliction when I tried to pray, for my spirit, instead of being master, was slave. I was unable to shut myself within myself without at the same time shutting in 1,000 irrelevances. Often I was more taken up with wishing away my hour of prayer and listening whenever the clock struck than in thinking good thoughts. Again and again I would have chosen any severe penance that might be imposed on me rather than have to practice recollection as a preparation to prayer. I found neither joy in God nor satisfaction in the world. When I was caught up in the pleasures of the world, I was unhappy in recalling what I owed to God. When I was with God, I was restless, craving for what the world had to offer. I passed almost 20 years on this storm-tossed sea. But I realized that by this time it was no longer possible to give up prayer. He who desired me for himself held me in his hand. And I realized the greatness of God's compassion for me. For while I was still entangled with the affairs of the world, he gave me the courage to pray. Mental prayer, in my opinion, is nothing else than an intimate sharing between friends. It means taking time frequently to be alone with him whom we know loves us. In order that love be true and the friendship endure, the wills of the friends must be in accord. The will of the Lord, it is already known, cannot be at fault. Our will is vicious, sensual, and ungrateful. And if you do not yet love him as he loves you, because you have not reached the degree of conformity with his will, you will endure this pain of spending a long while with one who is so different from you, whose friendship is of such immense benefit, and who loves you so much. The Lord asks two things of us: love of God and love of our neighbor. If we want to know whether we are keeping these commandments, we must discover, I believe, whether we genuinely love our neighbor. For we cannot be sure if we are loving God, whereas we can know if we love our neighbor. Ask the Lord to give you this perfect love for others. Allow him to work within you. If you do your best to fulfill this in every way you can, he will give you more than you can desire.
And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Should you wish to contact us, our email address is english@vatiradio.va. Or by snail mail, the address is English Programme, Vatican Radio, Vatican City, 00120. That's an easy address. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Then click on English World. The online menu will guide you through. And of course, you've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.